Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, we are going to be experiencing some unique conversation today. Why? Because we're going to be talking about UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And my guest, Mr. T.L. Keller, is going to be sharing some fascinating information with us. He's come out with a book called The Total Novice's Guide to UFOs. Well, he's got some stuff in here I haven't seen in some other books. This is really a good read.
Well, thank you very much, Donna. Thank you very much. I appreciate the compliment.
Well, I just found it amazing, Tom, that you were able to get so much concise, articulate information, as well as testimonies from military officers where they said, this is what I saw, this is what I experienced. That I just think the way you've put it together is wonderful. So for anybody that, even if they've read a lot of material, which I have, geez, there's just so much good stuff in here.
Well, thank you very much. I tried to write this from the perspective of somebody in the general public who knows a little about UFOs or maybe even nothing about them at all but would like to learn more. And everybody has heard about Roswell in one form or another. Some may think it there were flying saucers. Some maybe think there were weather balloons. But everyone has heard about Roswell, and that's where it starts. And we present a number of the more well-known UFO cases, and we progress to a series of 10 former military officers and non-commissioned officers who give their firsthand experiences with unidentified flying objects and extraterrestrial beings. And then, as you know, we proceed on through a number of other topics as to what the different types of craft have been reported, what types of beings are in control of these devices, and then we have a few extra thoughts about where we're going with all of this.
Well, again, I think that there is just so much good information. But I wanted, oh, by the way, I love your cartoons. I think
well,
the cartoons
thank you very
in
much.
The book, I really like the one. It's right at the front of the book. There is a flying saucer with long legs, and there's two Earth guys talking to each other, and they see the Martian. Naturally, he's green because that's typical. And he's fallen out of the bottom of his aircraft, and the two guys say to each other, obviously, they come from a planet with very little gravity. I mean, there's just these wonderful cartoons in here. I just think it's absolutely wonderful that you found them and you included them in it, because it keeps things, I think, in a very healthy perspective. Now, how did you become interested in this? I think that's also an interesting story.
Well, I'm a person in their 60s. But so this goes back many years when I was about 10 years of age. I was in elementary school, and a friend of mine brought in a book written by George Adamski, and it was called Flying Saucers Have Landed. And in it, there were some photographs, and there was a drawing of what was represented to be an extraterrestrial being. And he looked like a human being to me. And I thought, well, gee, is this possible? Could it be that beings from other solar systems, other parts of the galaxy, were coming here to visit us? And I then bought a book, which was called Flying Saucers from Outer Space. And that convinced me that this was a very real subject, and that there were beings and there were devices that were landing here from other planets, from other parts of the galaxy. And that's what got me interested in this, and I've been pursuing it for over 50 years. It's a fascinating subject.
It really is. Whitley Schreiber, you have the mention of Communion, which was put out in 1987, said, "When you read this incredible story, do not be too skeptical. This book is about forming a new relationship with the unknown. Instead of shunning the darkness, we can face straight into it with an open mind. When we do that, the unknown changes. Fearful things become understandable, and a truth is suggested. The enigmatic presence of the human mind winks back from the dark." I believe that that is what growth and development of a culture and a civilization does. It takes and lights up what appears to be darkness. It helps to erase fear. And fear is something that is a part of life naturally because of survival patterns of people. But it's amazing when you think of Orson Welles and War of the Worlds that he was narrating, and at that time people didn't have television, they only had radio, and how all, you know what, broke loose because they thought we were really being invaded because he was such a phenomenal narrator and he was so good. And people would tune in, they go, "Oh my goodness, what's happening here?" But it was story time.
Created a panic.
He did. Now, what is astonishing to me is that people that are in decision-making positions in government seem to think that we're all doomkopfs in the mentality department. And because of that experience, they think, oh, people can't take the truth. Oh, my goodness, these poor ding-dongs that are out there in life, they just are going to be absolutely overwhelmed with the truth. Boy, is that a bunch of baloney. Most people really want the truth. Now, Orson Welles' situation that he produced so many years ago, what year was that, by the way?
I believe it was 1938.
Well, the world that we have today, if somebody said, "Hey, folks, appear on the corner of 5th and 22nd in New York City, and we're going to be having a conversation with an alien conference out here in New York City," by golly, they'd be there.
I'm sure they would.
They wouldn't be saying, "Whoo, this is terrible." No, they'd say, "Okay, come on, we're going to go visit this. What's this all about?" After all, we've watched Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica. We've had all kinds of very advanced thinking that's come through sci-fi. And I think most people would say, "Gee whiz, how come we haven't had a good conversation with one of these people?"
Yes. It makes you realize that this is a very big galaxy and a very big universe, and to me it's to think that we are the only intelligent beings in all that space. It would be a terrible waste of space, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be absolutely horrible.
Is quite likely that, for me at least, beings have been coming here to this planet for a long time. And I'm not just talking about a few decades. Personally, I think they've been coming here for thousands of years. When you think of all the billions and billions of stars just in our own galaxy, the same billions that Carl Sagan used to talk about, by the way,
mm-hmm.
It to me, there is just no chance that we're the only ones that have a capability to travel in space. Carl Sagan, that is, used to say, "Well, there are all kinds of intelligent beings out there, but the distances are just too far for them to get here." Well, I happen to know differently. You know, back in 1993, I had an opportunity to listen to the late Ben Rich. He put on a lecture at UCLA, and he happened to be the president of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works. And, of course, they have manufactured any number of aircraft and, for that matter, spacecraft over the years. And he was there basically to give a thumbnail description of Lockheed Martin history. And several times during that presentation, he would say that if you have thought about it, Lockheed Martin has done it. And he went on to describe a number of projects that he's worked on. And towards the end of his lecture, he showed a disc, a flying disc, as his final slide in the presentation. And then he would repeat the same thing. He would say, if you can imagine it, Lockheed Martin has done it. And then one of my friends, who was with me, followed him to the stage door, so to speak, and he asked Ben Rich how UFOs worked. And Ben Rich responded by asking him a question. He said, well, how does ESP work? And my friend said, well, everything in the universe is connected. And then Mr. Rich said, that's how UFOs work. And he walked out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been any number of reports of flying discs that have been seen at the Palmdale facility of Lockheed Martin. I have even interviewed one person who has saw a flying disc on the drawing board in one of their engineering offices. I have no doubt that these devices, some of them, are being manufactured in California. And after studying flying discs over the last 50 or 60 years, they perfected that technology. And during this lecture, Ben Rich, the former president of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, told the group that I was in is that Lockheed Martin then had the technology to go to the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that just about said it all.
I used to work for a company in Glendale, California, and they had a leading scientist that worked there. His name was George, and he was a man of mature years when I was working for them. And I'll never forget, because the company did a lot of the processing of photography that was done in outer space. And I happened to walk into his office one day, and I looked at various things, and we were having a discussion. And I mentioned certain attitudes that I had, and this was a few years ago, and I said, I really feel like there is so much that we are just beginning to scratch the surface about. And he said, there's no way anybody can know what is being discussed and what's on the drawing board. He said, you have no idea. And I thought to myself then, and the conversation went into more detail, this man was in deep involved discussions with leading scientists that worked for all kinds of organizations in California. And he knew about many, many things long before there was much of a discussion about what we're discussing today. And it's become more public because there have been documents that have come forth, people that have taken the positioning of saying, I'm going to give this information out and I'm going to document it and make sure that this is there because the public needs to know about it. So these things have been happening through the years, which is really great. But I'll never forget talking with this man and being aware that he would have loved to have been able to discuss the areas of technology and the tremendous expansion that was going on, but he wasn't at liberty to do so.
Yes, that's right. They're not.
So I think that's very important.
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that Ben Rich said during his talk is that he didn't want to. He noticed that there were several CIA people there in the audience, plus uniformed military people, and he said, there are only certain things that I can say, and beyond that, I won't, because I don't want to go to Fort Leavenworth.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there are consequences, possibly even worse than that, and that could happen if someone with a very high security clearance says a little bit too much. in any case, that was my experience, and that has just to do with those that are manufactured under a U.S. government contract in the Antelope Valley of California.
Mm-hmm.
And
now
who knows? Yes, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is, let's talk about some of the things that you have in your book, because you cover the Aztec crash retrieval. Now, this was in Aztec, New Mexico, and occurred
yes, it was.
In 1948, and there was a crash site. There were four specific scientists that were members of the original MJ-12 group that you have information on here. Let's just talk about that for a minute, because there was a man by the name of Chan Johnson who actually did drawings of what he saw as part of the crew.
Yes.
Of this vehicle.
Well, I don't know that he saw them. I believe what happened was that he made drawings based upon the descriptions that he was given. I don't know that Mr. Johnson was actually part of that group that did the retrieval. But
well,
there were a number of fairly well-known individuals involved, including Dr. Robert Oppenheimer and John von Neumann, and so it was at a fairly high level of involvement as to those who were involved with the retrieval of that particular disc.
You also have a statement about that particular event that Baron Nicholas von Papen was brought in to describe what was thought was the propulsion system for this vehicle, and he described the vehicle as some sort of computerized electromagnetically driven flying saucer, and
yes.
It appeared in a particular report. Then you've got something here about the Belgian UFO wave. Now, there's a number of countries that have gone through this there in Europe. There have been reports in Italy. There have been reports in France, but in England especially. I don't know what is so significant about the UK, but they have had just phenomenal reports there. Again, Germany, Switzerland, you bring up here. You talk about a guy, and he described them as beam ships of Switzerland. Edward
yes.
Billy Meyer, 1975.
Yes.
Tell us about this guy. He was sort of different.
He's definitely different. This is the Billy Meyer case. This goes back to the 70s. He was basically a handyman, a Swiss handyman who lived out in the hills in Switzerland, and he for whatever reason got some kind of telepathic message to go out of his house and into one of the local valleys with a camera. And which he did, and according to his claim, he met an extraterrestrial being, which he claimed to be from the Pleiades. Apparently, this was a woman. Her name was claimed to be Semjazi, and he saw the device land, and she came out, and she met with him and spoke to him, apparently in Swiss German, and after that he was able to take a number of different photographs of these beings and or I should say the flying discs, and there were several different configurations there. And he would then go back. He'd have his films developed. He would invite people to come to his home and see his photographs. The locals apparently were quite well aware of what was going on, and some of them saw these beam ships, as he called them. Apparently, he received telepathic messages from these so-called Pleiadians, and apparently had volumes and volumes of handwritten recordings of the telepathic messages that he had received. And these were all been documented. He also had videos, and he had he made sound recordings as well. And a number of different UFO investigators went to his home and examined what he said and his recordings and his photographs, and there were really quite a few of them, and there were starkly clear color photographs, which some of them appear in my book. And he became quite well known as a result of this, and he's never been shown to be falsifying anything. His photographs have been examined by a fairly well-known image photographic image consultant, and they seem to bear out. It's one of those well-known stories that seems to have a lot of documentation to it, and it's been with us for quite a few years. It's a fascinating story.
It really is. One of the aspects that I found extremely interesting is that more than one person that was interviewed or is on record about talking about, let's say, to someone that's from a place in space, and this alien, using that term, expressed their concern over the way we were doing things. And they weren't interested really in becoming involved with People magazine. They were interested in communicating with whoever they were able to reach and say, "This, we want people to become aware of things. We don't want them to self-destruct." And of course, humans have just, if you look at our history, I mean, our behavior is appalling in so many instances, even today. And the destruction and the willful harming of our own kind, plus so many other aspects of life, can be quite upsetting. It's just really amazing. We think we're civilized, and many times we display exactly the opposite. But these people many times will say, "This is what I was told. We need to be aware of this." So when they're chosen, they're often people that are, for all intents and purposes, nondescript. I mean, Edward is a guy living up in the mountains. He hardly has any contact with people, and yet he was chosen to be a communicator of information and documenting various things. Have those documents been kept public? Obviously, you had access to them. Were any of them confiscated where nobody could ever get to them again?
Well, some of his materials apparently were stolen. Some of the photographs were taken, but on the other hand, he willfully gave away photographs without compensation. So I'm also aware that there is a book out which apparently is a translation of some 1,600 documents that he transcribed from these telepathic messages. The name of the book evades me, but it is available. I'm sure someone could locate that. It's probably out of print, but nevertheless, I have seen examples of it.
You have in here a documentation of an incident, a pilot that was flying a Japanese airline Boeing 747 passenger plane. This was in 1986, and Captain Terauchi was the person that was in charge of this, and he had he saw a, you know, a very, very large ball, quoting from your book, a spherical object with lights running around it and two smaller UFOs, and he immediately contacted the air control people and asked if there was any traffic in the area. He was told there was not. He saw this captain, saw this large object moving to various locations around his plane, and the vehicle, the flying vehicle, was four times the size of a 747, so that's big in
yes.
our book anyway. And mm-hmm. he contacted the U.S. Air Force, and they said they saw on their radar a large blip that
that's correct.
Was right where he was moving.
Mm-hmm.
And this poor guy ended up going through all kinds of misery because he went public with this.
Well, that's the problem of being a uniformed pilot from any airline. You don't want to report UFOs if you want to keep your job. Some airlines have the attitude that if you report a UFO and you're in uniform, you won't be working for them anymore. But in this particular case, it was an interesting case, and that's why I included it in the Total Novice's Guide to UFOs, because it not only showed up visually to him and his crew members, it showed up on the radar of his aircraft, and it showed up on the Air Force radar as well. And the Air Force took recordings of the radar monitoring, and then the Japanese pilot was interviewed by the FAA, and that was all recorded. And all of the various documentation that went along with this ended up in Washington, D.C., at the FAA. And what happened was that the chief of the FAA's accident reporting group had all of this documentation. They had recordings of the Air Force radar. They had the recordings of the Boeing 747 radar and the visual reports that the pilot had filled out, and then mysterious people from the FBI and some others that were unidentified demanded that this chief of accident investigation give them the documents and the recordings, and they looked at them, and then they said to the FAA official, this didn't happen, you never saw any of this, and the documentation just simply disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why that particular incident was included in the book, because it was fully documented in every which way you could. Often when you have a visual sighting, you don't have it on radar, or you have something on radar but you don't have a visual sighting. Well, this was documented by two different radar systems and visually, and then fully documented in terms of the report from the pilot himself, and so you had everything together here, and then the documentation, the evidence, simply walked away.
You have a quote in your book by Robert Kennedy, and I know we're getting close to running out of time here, and I really like this, and I wanted to share it because I think it is very appropriate for today's world. Few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet, it is the one essential vital quality for those who seek to change a world which yields most painfully to change. And I think that's an aspect of the human experience. It's just phenomenal. You have just so many wonderful cases outlined here, one of which I'll mention is like Gordon Cooper and Dr. Daniel W. Fry. We have Donald E. Kehoe, who is a major of the United States Marine Corps. There are just so many fabulous, fabulous things in your book that I just think makes for a wonderful reading, number one, but also gives us perspectives that so frequently are not covered. What is your website? Oh, by the way, I want my listeners to know that you are actually involved with UFO conference. It's going on, is it in New Mexico right now?
Thank you for mentioning it. I'll put in a plug for them. It's the International UFO Convention, or Congress, I should say. It's a meeting in Scottsdale, Arizona for the remainder of February. So it goes through the 27th of February. That's a Sunday. And we're at the Radisson Fort McDowell Resort. And it's a terrific show. It's a convention and film festival. And we have a terrific number of speakers, very famous ones, as a matter of fact. And they have a film festival showing a number of different UFO documentaries. So I would encourage anybody in the Southwest to attend.
All right. And Mr. Keller, what is your website?
Yes, it's thetotalnovicesguide.com.
Thetotalnovicesguide.com. And that's a plural,
right,
on novice. Okay.
Yes.
Totalnovicesguide.com. Well, it's
right.
been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much for
being with
me today. And you have a magnificent time at your conference.
It's a terrific show.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. Donna Sebo here. The book is The Total Novice's Guide to UFOs, What You Need to Know. And he has got a lot of information in here that I have not seen in some of the other publications that I have reviewed regarding UFOs. So check it out, thetotalnovicesguide.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
It's time to get your glow on at the Northwest Women's Show, a show that's all about you. 400 exhibits, 4 entertainment stages, fascinating seminars, and best of all, shopping, shopping, shopping. New this year is the Glow Experience. 5 fun and easy steps to help you make the most of your time at the show. Meet Terry Haas from HGTV's Design to Sell. Polly Klein, famous animal communicator. Dance diva Chris Linares, who will help you unleash all the power you need to dance your own dance. Plus fun and trendy fashion shows from JCPenney, favorite authors Anne and Leslie Rule. And they're back! Seattle's hottest firefighters. Bring your mom, your daughter, your sister, your friends. The Northwest Women's Show, sponsored by Drugstore.com, American Family Insurance, PECU, Como TV, Beauty.com, and Queen Smoke. It's electric. Get your glow on at Questfield Event Center, March 4th through 6th. The Northwest Women's Show, it's such a girl thing. For show information, go to nwwomenshow.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, it will be my pleasure. Here's the toll-free worldwide telephone number you can call in on, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I have some fabulous information that was sent to me. I honestly don't remember who it was that sent this to me, but it's about Poland and how they have dealt with business that I'd like to share with you today. And then I've just got some real neat stories, but I want you to know I'm also going to be available for phone calls, 888-815-9756. But before I start chatting about Poland and what they have accomplished as what some people call the third world country. The Polish people are just amazing. They just are so resilient in so many ways. I have a great deal of appreciation and respect for what they've gone through as a country and how they've managed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and then some. But I want to remind those of you in the Pacific Northwest, the Women's Show is going to be coming up, yes, weekend after next. Woo-hoo! I'm telling you, this is an event you don't want to miss. And I'm going to be in booth number 407. I'm also going to be hosting a women's forum on March. That's right, March is just around the corner. March 4, and we will have 6 speakers. Topics will be on health and wellness and animals and also women and children's legal rights. So we're going to be covering those topics, discovering them and discussing them at great detail. And you will be able to find out a lot about what's going on at this wonderful event by going to the NorthwestWomensShow.com. NorthwestWomensShow.com. Again, I'm going to be in booth number 407. I'm clearing out my library like I do every year. Take what I no longer have room for because I've got a whole bunch of other new stuff coming in. So I bring it to the show, and you'll be able to choose from that. If you want to take some of those books home with you, you'll be able to do that. Also, I'll be doing mini sessions for people. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I will be speaking at 1:30 on Saturday and 1 o'clock on Sunday, talking about the psychic mind and you. So I hope you'll join me. Come by and say hello. I always love to interact with people that listen to the show. Okay, again, 888-815-9756. And quick like a bunny, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Spencer Lode, the brain mechanic. Aha! The thing between your ears? Yes, the brain. Awesome instrument, and they have just begun to discover so many things about it. So we're going to be learning more about that wonderful part of ourselves that frequently we don't give too much attention to. But maybe after tomorrow you will. Okay, I wanted to chat about Poland a little bit. This was about the president, Eric Stewart, of the Poland Business Council. Poland, for so many, many, many years, they really did not do well. People knew hunger firsthand, goods and services, very, very few available. And they are now really seeing a lot of positive things. They have maintained a positive GDP growth rate, registering about 3.8% for the year 2010. And their businesses are growing, and they're facing their challenges like every country on this planet is, and they are facing some of their challenges with agriculture. Now, their agricultural patterning apparently was quite fragmented due to the war and so many other things. Now, they've got more than 38 million people. They rank number 7 in the EU's 27 member states. However, in terms of its agricultural population, it ranks first, with almost 39% of its population living in rural areas. And the number of people employed in agriculture in Poland is 2.5 times greater than that of the other countries in the European Union. Now, they don't have as many farms as perhaps we do or other countries do. They have approximately 1.8 million farms that have an acre or more, which isn't a whole lot of land. The average farm size of approximately, they said, 25 acres. They say if you compare that with the U.S., where 20% of the population lives in rural areas and less than 3% work in agriculture in our country, in the U.S., and the average farm in the United States is 418 acres. That's the average size of a farm in the U.S. Now, the reason we have a lesser amount in the United States that are involved in agriculture is because of the mechanization that evolved. They were able to do farming on a much broader basis and work more efficiently due to the technologies that developed. Now, with Poland, the northern and northwestern regions of that country have very large farming operations. Usually they're state collective farms. They have fairly modern machinery, but in the south there are smaller plots for farming. And in that part of the country, those people are not able to afford a lot of the technology, so they use horses. And about half of those farms, they say, are purely subsistence. But even though during their past they were severely oppressed, they loved their private ownership positioning. So they managed to retain a lot of their agricultural land, and many of the individual farmers were able to provide themselves with a living as well as with food. And consequently, they were able to survive some very difficult times because they could barter, they could trade, they could sell the food, the extra food they had. Now, when the communist element disappeared, when it fell apart, and borders were open to imports and exports, there was quite a challenge to the Polish farmers because they couldn't compete on domestic and global markets. However, they were able to make changes via elections because they started putting people into office that had an understanding of the agricultural community. Do you know that a company here in the United States, Smithfield Foods, that's right, Smithfield Foods, they decided they were going to work with the Polish people. Now, they have huge facilities here in the United States. What they did, they bought the largest meat processor in Poland. And obviously, Smithfield is associated with pork, and they bought that type of a meat processing company. And that was in January of 2000. Now, the banks at the time in Poland weren't willing to help farmers out. They weren't willing to give loans. They really just didn't want to do anything like that. And Smithfield Corporation, Smithfield Foods, they did something that was really business smart. They provided loan guarantees and direct loans so that those farmers in Poland could modernize their operations, secure a stable supply of quality livestock and food for the animals. And the local politicians were really upset with that. They didn't want that to happen at all. However, the farmers saw opportunity and said, "We'll accept your offer." Do you know now all of that opposition has gone because the Polish farmers are really doing well. Now, right now, Poland is a country that has phenomenal growth in agriculture. And after 5 years, they are now exporting 4.0 to 11.3 billion, 2.8 times the amount before, and they import an equal amount. So they are developing trade. They are able to keep a decent budget. And do you know their exports to the United States, or no, excuse me, to the European Union countries increased by 248%? They are so enthusiastic about their agricultural positioning. However, it's going to take time because they're working against some environments that are slow to change. They don't know how to shift their thinking. So it's all a process, isn't it? The United States used to be the leader in the world for providing food for people around the world. And I think that we can come back to a very strong positioning again. I don't know that we'll ever get to the dominant positioning like we had, but I think we can do it again. And I think in this country, we need to respect the agricultural community, because I'll tell you, if you don't have food, you don't get anything done. And when you can have surplus, then you can sell it to somebody else. The Polish farmers realized that, and that's how they were able to survive very difficult times. But I thought that was a very interesting commentary, and I would share it with you. We need to realize that we have got billions of people on this planet that have to be fed. And we are in a positioning as a nation in the United States to be able to provide a substantial amount of that food. Our country does need to improve and develop exports to other countries. And when we have to import food that otherwise we were able to provide for ourselves because of good farming practices, we're not able to do that anymore. We really need to think about what it is we need to change, because we can make a difference. It really does make sense. This is Donna Sebo. By the way, isn't it interesting that an American company is educating the Polish farmers? Mm-hmm. How many times have we done that? We did it with Japan. We did it with Germany. We've done it with countries around the world, and we're still doing it. That's sort of the American attitude. If I know how I can help you, then let's pass it on. Not a bad way to be, but we also need to remember ourselves. This is Donna Sebo, and I'll be back in just a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
We're back! The Northwest Women's Show with 400 exhibits, entertainment, seminars, the Glow Experience, fashion shows, and shopping, shopping, shopping. Meet HGTV's Terry Haas, animal communicator Polly Klein, and Seattle's hottest firefighters. March 4th through 6th at Quest Field Event Center. The Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing. Show information at nwwomenshow.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna, 888-815-9756. I was visiting with a friend this afternoon, and Francis brought me some information about a woman whose name was Janine, or is, she's not was, she's still with us, Janine Fox, and how her life was turned around because of the love of an animal. And I was planning on sharing it with you, but before I share it with you, I just have to share something wacky and weird with you. We have so many laws on the books that are so out of date, so ridiculous, we need to erase them. We just need to get rid of them. And I don't know why, but nobody ever, once the law's been put in, it's like nobody ever wants to remove it, even though it's nonsensical. Well, I came across some Kentucky laws. Someone called them the Kentucky Commandments, and I just thought that they were really something else. And every state has them. There isn't a state in the union that doesn't have them. In Kentucky, there's a law in the book that mandates that people bathe at least once a year. Whew. That's a rough one. Anyone who throws eggs or tomatoes at a public speaker will be sentenced to a year in prison. Don't you think it'd be more effective if they made them clean up the mess that they made? Females in bathing suits are not allowed on any highway unless they are escorted by two officers armed with a club. That's an interesting picture. This law does not apply to females weighing less than 90 pounds or those exceeding 200 pounds, nor does it apply to female horses. You can tell when that one was ridden. And then last but not least, it's against the law to dye chicks, ducklings, or baby rabbits unless you're offering six or more of them for sale and at the same time. Oh, I bet you there's so many more of these. I had a guest once years ago who had done research. In fact, he was an attorney, and he and his secretary went through laws of all of the states in the union, and he said it was amazing what was still on the books. And he said attorneys just don't like to take them off, which I find fascinating. My question is, why not? We are so overwhelmed with unnecessary laws. Why not get rid of these duds? It's amazing, but that's the way it is. Janine Fox didn't want a dog. It's the year 1994, and she had that year retired as an auditor. And she said, my life was all about doing, not about being. On her 26th wedding anniversary of that year, she walked into her backyard in Kansas City, and this adorable puppy runs up to her. She immediately thought that this was a present, an anniversary present from her husband. And she said the feeling that she got from this little puppy was that of just unconditional love. However, she heard someone calling to her over her fence and asked if there was a puppy in her yard, and she had to give the puppy back to the neighbor boy that lived next door because the baby had gotten out of his yard. Well, she said to her husband that upon meeting this beautiful, bouncing baby puppy, that she knew it was time to get a dog. When you get a pet, pets have a tremendous effect on us, and it's been proven time and time again. People, their blood pressure goes down. They have something to care for. It offers the opportunity for you to get out and walk the animal, and it's wonderful for socialization. I mean, you get out with a dog, and people say, oh, what a cute dog. You have somebody to talk to. And she said that she found out after she got her puppy, whose name was Baby, that it was going to be a lot more than that for her. You see, Janine was an abused woman. And Baby, apparently, had been abused herself. Janine had gotten this dog from a rescue group. And she said she just absolutely found that in having this little pet with her, that secrets that she had kept buried about abuse in her childhood began to heal. She said she had kept secrets for 50-plus years. And she said, my little pet taught me to sit in silence and go within. And she said I could talk to Baby about what I'd been through. And it was enabling me to release all of my pain. And she was beginning to heal. Well, she had an interesting experience. Sometimes ahas come in moments that you wouldn't expect that they would affect you in such a way. Well, one moment was when she got up from sitting with Baby on her lap. When she put Baby down, she noticed how her dark slacks were all covered with Baby's hair. And while she was taking the hair remover roller and getting it all off of her black slacks, the thought came to her, you need to shed the past. Baby's shedding her fur, you need to shed the past. Well, she has been able to do that. And at this time, she's now traveling, doing book signings. Yes, she's written a book. And her little dog passed away February the 14th, 2008. She passed away on Valentine's Day. But Janine Janine went and got herself another little rescue dog, a Pomeranian, which she named Teddy Bear. And she said he had been abused too. But do you know what? He wakes up every morning happy to be alive. And she said, thanks to my dear, dear dog, baby, I do the same thing. Animals are incredible. They can show us so many things about ourselves that maybe we're afraid to look at. But if we are honest with ourselves, we can heal, just like Janine Fox did. Wonderful story there, and I'm so glad that Frances brought it to me so I could share it with you. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. Yes, the hour's gone. We'll be back with you tomorrow talking about the brain mechanic with Spencer Lode, and I invite you to join us. This is Donna Sebo. Have a great day. You're going to have a fabulous, fabulous story of your own one day that you're going to want to write about. Put it to paper. It's a good thing to do. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.